Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Again, thank you so much for taking your time and joining our podcast today. We are very pleased. Before we jump in, I'd love to learn more about yourself, learn about your background. So could you please walk us through your achievements and your background, and then we'll take it from there.
Well, thank you for having me here on your podcast, yes, and it's my privilege to be here. I'm also happy to be sharing always with my experiences, my mistakes, my achievements with the youth from the region in Mongolia and globally, and I'm excited and look forward to an interesting and stimulating discussion. Hope I actually also learn from it. I'm Gan. I'm from Mongolia. I'm 52, so not that young. Have been working in the financial services industry since, you wouldn't believe it, but 1991. I joined the Mongolian Stock Exchange as a trading floor supervisor, and moved on to become an assistant to a consultant, ADB consultant, who was helping us start the Mongolian Stock Exchange. I had to pick up English very quickly. You wouldn't believe, but back then in Mongolia, nobody spoke English, and I pretended to have some English, and the management of the stock exchange quickly decided to put me as a translator to the ADB consultant advisor. John Koloski was his name. So I had to learn English overnight, basically. In 1 month, I started writing and reading, and I think in like 3 months, I started speaking English. And when you think about Mongolia, you can now imagine what the situation is like in North Korea now. So that's how Mongolia was at that time. I don't think Kazakhstan was far, much better. Of course, Kazakhstan was, or Stan countries were inside the Soviet Union. You could travel to Moscow. You could, you know, have access to food and some, at that time, we would call them luxury products such as Pepsi Cola, or eat some fruits, exotic fruits. We didn't have that. We were a sealed off country, a buffer state between China and Russia. Mm-hmm. And so it was an eye opener. I started doing trading. Then I decided to go studying finally. In 1993, I went to Hungary to study. Came back in 97 already with my wife, and became a dad in 1997. Got a job with the Central Bank of Mongolia. Quickly got promoted to head up some different initiatives, including the overhaul of the supervision function of the Central Bank. And then they gave me a responsibility to oversee state-owned banks and privatization process. You know, got pissed off in 98. In the meantime, I founded Mongolia's first credit cooperative, savings loan cooperative. Worked with, enrolled, even today's governor of the central bank became a member of the credit union, which he is still a member of a Kidan savings loan cooperative. And then in 98, I decided to join a microcredit, microfinance initiative funded by UNDP. In 1 year, I turned it into a non-bank finance company licensed by the central bank on a pilot basis. And then in 2001, I merged three non-bank finance companies to found one of the leading commercial banks in Mongolia, which is called Hasbank. The motto was Right Bank, Hasbank. And by 2007, that bank had already 10% of the banking sector's market share. I created a holding company for the bank, which started a leasing company, insurance company, securities, capital markets operations, invested in Kyrgyzstan, had this ambition to expand into Central Asia with our microfinance know-how and technology, and started doing SMS banking. Developed a solution with a joint venture, in a joint venture with a French company. The company was called Nomadic Solutions. And then did franchising services to rural credit unions, invested in China, did consulting assignments, and was doing pretty well for a 37-year-old by 2010. When all of a sudden I was called into Ministry of Finance by then Prime Minister to serve the country, couldn't say no, went into the Ministry of Finance, got beaten up pretty badly during the next elections, but Mongolia grew 17.4% in 2011. That was the highest growth rate in the world at that time. And then lost in the elections, came out and started Art Financial Group. Sold the bank. And now Art Financial Group is a pioneering entity that has about 46 different financial licenses from regulators, including the central bank. We have a physical infrastructure of the Mongol Post for distribution of our services, products and services. And then we have ownership of a payments platform, which is called Most, which is provides service payment services to all financial companies, financial intermediaries. And we have a super app, which is called RDAP, where people can get a full range of financial services online. So this is basically my story. This is where I stand. So I have worked for the stock exchange, for the central bank, for a commercial bank, for fintech now. 12 of my companies are listed on the Mongolian Stock Exchange. My another holding company, which is called AI Group, owns a stock exchange and a crypto exchange. And we own the largest media group in Mongolia because we want to get the message across. We want to help Mongolia become a rich country. We want Mongolia, and in competition with Kazakhstan, we want Mongolia to be a wolf economy for Asia. I came up with the idea in 2007, and we want to be a financial center, and we want to be the richest country on the planet before I die. It's not a question of whether we will be one day the richest country, become a richest country on the planet. It's a question of when, and I want it rather sooner than later.
That's huge. Again, thank you so much for sharing. That's a huge background. More than 30 years in the financial industry, and that's a lot about not only about yourself but also the empire that you built. Very, very excited to learn more about your look on how you actually overcame certain challenges. But before we jump into like very serious and deep questions, I just wanted to ask. So you started your career in the early days of Mongolia's financial market. So what did you see then that others didn't, and how you actually got there so quick? Because you said that you got promoted very fast and then you started growing. Just wanted to learn more about that.
Well, I'm after I finished my secondary school, I told my mom, and my dad, thankfully, was away. I told her that I don't want to go to university because everybody went. And I said, all my 44 classmates went to applied for university and gave the exams and became students. Why should I? Everybody wants to study further. Say, I had enough tuition. I don't want to study further. I know enough about life. Arrogance.
Yeah.
But that defines my character, I guess. I go against the stream. I go against the flow. I'm not a conformist. And later on in life, I found this saying that justified my actions. And that said, only dead fish go with the flow. Live fish go against the flow in the stream.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Because, I mean, like nowadays, especially a lot of the youngsters, they're saying like, I'm not going to go to university. I'm not going to study at school because I know a lot of things about life. But, you know, generally, a lot of people actually achieve success without really attending universities and schools.
And, well, later we learn about the dropouts like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and all the other guys, Elon Musk, you know, all the dropouts. But that was later. And I didn't know that. And I didn't drop out. But I dropped out after high school for 3 years. I got bored. And then I tried to enjoy my student life in Hungary. And I did enjoy my 4 years in the university. And although I failed my last semester because I fell in love with my wife and didn't attend the university at all in the last semester, I still could graduate with cum laude, with a GPA of 3.9, which was pretty high.
That's
so
huge.
Learning doesn't come very hard to me, so I just pick up things, you know, on the run, and that's a good ability to have. And I think reading lots of fiction books, historic books, when I was a kid, because there was no other form of entertainment when I was a kid. There was no TV, no radio, no phones, nothing. There was a Russian broadcaster which broadcast black and white, and they broadcast communist propaganda. So I read a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, I truly, you know, support your vision here in terms of learning, because, you know, sometimes academic learning might not be as effective. Learning from all the resources that you have, especially nowadays, you have everything. You have YouTube, you have LinkedIn, you have books. You definitely have access to different kinds of learning materials. But of course, back then, reading books was, I believe, one of the things that you can actually do to gain experience, to gain knowledge from different sources. So let's transition to, you know, building your standpoint from building from an emerging market. So what's unique about building a modern financial ecosystem from an emerging market like Mongolia, in your personal opinion? What are the advantages or challenges that stand out most?
Well, back then we didn't call it emerging markets economies. We just said, or startups or entrepreneurs, we just had a mission to provide affordable credit, to provide access to capital, to credit. That was the original goal. Because people didn't know what banks were. They never had bank loans before. We had to teach them what the credit was, what the interest rate was, what was the loan contract. And so all of my clients back in the 90s were first-time borrowers from a financial institution. Before that, it was just friends, relatives, or pawn shops in the extreme situations. And then we had to do lots of education. And I always had this idea that in my lifetime, I will be able to reach everybody with different financial services. And I did, because Mongolia now has, all of our population has access to credit. And I think a bank called KMF started at the same time. Shokhar Jusupov is the CEO, and he started at the same time. So it's a parallel story, but we've transformed into a bank in 2001, whereas Shokhar transformed his company, KMF, into a bank in August of this year. So we were 28 years ahead, I guess. Yeah, I was, again, I'm a pioneer. I quickly get tired of routine tasks, and I don't like going like vinyl over there on around and around. I think life is too precious to do things many times again and again. So I try to improvise and change whatever I'm doing from one day to another, so that I always do new things, so that I always go on an uncharted territory. I always try to create the path, yeah. And so first non-bank, first leasing company, first mortgage loans, many first crypto initiative in Mongolia, first reverse takeover, listing on the Mongolian Stock Exchange, etc. So many first, many first funds, the open-ended mutual funds, closed-end mutual funds, etc. So we always try to break the ice and create the path for others to follow. And then the mission is to provide the access. And now for me, the mission is to create the investor nation. So all my companies have only one mission statement in their charters, approved by all the shareholders. And that is to create the investor nation. This is my wife. Sorry to break up, take a break. It means more editing for her. This is Inga.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
What's this guy?
This guy is interviewing me. He's a Kazakh guy, runs a venture capital fund, and does run his podcasts. And I'm giving him an interview.
Nice to
Nice to
meet
meet
you.
you. Nice to meet you
Good
too.
luck.
Yeah, thank you so much again. That really makes sense, and I'm sure that because right now, even the venture ecosystem in Central Asia is also developing and emerging. And as Big Sky Capital, we are also one of the first firms here developing the venture capital industry. And we know for a fact that being one of the first is absolutely hard and sometimes challenging because a lot of the people don't really understand, what we're doing, right? We always have to explain, okay, venture capital is this and this and this, and then to every person you have to explain. But fortunately enough, for the past couple of years, like a lot of the people, they understand what the startup is, what's the venture ecosystem is, not only in Kazakhstan but also all around the world. And we know for a fact all the challenges to be the first people developing something in a country.
Have you been to Mongolia?
I've never been to Mongolia. I'd love to visit one day, Ulaanbaatar and all the amazing
Well,
cities.
there is a direct flight. Buy a ticket and come. I just had some visitors. I was in Kazakhstan a couple months ago, and then I invited a couple of people to come over and went to say hi to Shalkar. Went to, many years I haven't been there. And congratulations with all the big achievements, and congratulations on the good president who shows good positive leadership and amazing progress, guys. And
Thank you so much, Gan. I really appreciate it. And of course, anytime I have opportunity, I'm gonna fly over to Mongolia as well. So I'd love to, continue our conversation in terms of scaling, financial innovation, in emerging markets, because right now Mongolia is growing very fast as well. And I would love to learn more about the ART Financial Group as well, because today it touches more than 1 million people. And how did you manage to scale adoption so deeply in a country of just 3.5 million? Because that's a huge result.
So my former bank has 1 million clients right now, and we have now 1.9 million accounts, and we don't have branches. So when I started Art Financial Group, I told myself and I told my team, I said, I have built a financial services group. I have invested internationally. I have created a bank in my past career. I don't want to repeat the mistakes I've made during my past career and enhance the achievements that I've produced back then. So that's the product result of the efforts that we put into building our financial group in the past 12 years. I don't believe in organic growth, so we engaged in all types of mergers and acquisitions all the time, and that's why we have now various teams which are running about 50 different companies, and our motto is stronger together. We have one logo for all the companies. All the companies are pulling in the same direction in the sense that we have a very easy mission statement. I said we will have one logo, one mission statement. Whether you're an insurance company, a brokerage, or a credit union, or asset manager, you will have one mission. You will have one motto. You will have one logo so that we don't change. We don't spend individually money on marketing and brand recognition. It's one, and we pull into one direction. The motto is stronger together. We have one super app. Each company doesn't have separate apps. We put all the services and products on our app, and then people can go in there and get our services, buy our products. But then Artcoin, which is a blockchain-based loyalty program, is a reward program for picking us up and also staying with us. So loyalty is built through Artcoins. There is cross-selling potential because people need a credit card, they need the savings, they need insurance, they have pension, and they can go to a postal office and use our app, do the payments. Mm-hmm. You get rewarded with Artcoins, which are transparent, but also Artcoin price changes. So because it's an asset on it of its own, if the price goes up, it increases our sales. If our sales go up, we have to buy back more Artcoins from the market because we are giving more. That means we have to buy back more. That drives the prices up. That increases our sales, increases our profits, and we have to buy more, and that increases the prices. That's a perfect circular reference code on Excel, which doesn't work. In our case, it works. That's why when price of Artcoin goes up, people want to enroll and open accounts with us. That's why we have 1.9 million accounts, including kids. We have 110,000 shareholders. We have about 300,000 insurance policyholders. We have 150,000 pension holders, 1.1 million app holders, 300,000 Artcoin holders, etc., etc. So it just adds up, yeah, across the different companies. And then if the person came just to, in the first place, to access some credit, next step is for us to nudge him to open a savings account, ask for a credit card, do a repeat loan, and get rewarded with Artcoin. And since he has some Artcoins in his account, he keeps coming back. Mm-hmm. If the price goes up, he wants more. That's it.
Yeah, that's that level of penetration is extremely rare nowadays. Now a lot of the banks are kind of like creating different kinds of apps for different kinds of purposes, and actually having that one platform which contains all the financial instruments in one place absolutely makes sense, especially nowadays, because people don't have to download different kinds of apps. They don't have to get confused on how to get a loan, on how to buy certain things, right? So that's a great achievement to have. And I think nowadays, especially when people are using bank applications, they might get confused as well, because a lot of the functions. And how like exactly, so because unfortunately I wasn't able to try out your app just for for information. Is it like, so whenever you log into app, you have different kinds of functions, or is it like pretty straightforward and you can actually use it from your phone and get all the instructions?
Yeah, so app looks like this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you see there is You can make investments, you can save, you can buy insurance, you can pay. So if you press here, it shows you a QR, and then you can add money. It's linked to all the bank accounts, and then you can use your credit card, and then you can say, okay, let's say create an invoice in the QR form. See, and then people can just use this, and then you can earn loyalty points here. And again, the difference between other apps and ours is that, first of all, it's Revolut, Robinhood, WeChat, and Ali, and let's say Temu in one. And the difference between other super apps and ours is that we own the ecosystem behind it. We own all the companies that provide services. So not third party. And then you can like do chat, and then inside chat you can, you know, send, you can say hi. It's inside your wallet. And then you can go and inside the chat, let's move some money.
Yes, that's very, very convenient.
And and then you get rewarded with art coins. You see, whatever action you do inside RDAP, you get rewarded art coins, which we also. Is our utility token on Polygon, on Binance, bridged between different platforms.
Yeah, that actually gives a lot of, you know, dopamine boost, especially if you try to gamify it, because nowadays a lot of the apps, not only financial ones, but fitness apps, education apps, they create those kinds of like coins to engage its users. So I think that function that you have, guys, it's very useful to have nowadays. Transitioning to global partnership and financial wellness. So, how can companies from smaller economies like Mongolia compete or collaborate on the global fintech stage?
Well, I think the solutions that we have, the innovation that we have come up with here in Mongolia is of interest to not just emerging economies, but to US, European, and all the OECD countries. And when I go around in around financial capitals of the world and show what we did integrating fiat and crypto into one app, working with the regulators for the past 10 years to come up with a system that enables people to access crypto while enjoying the most efficient traditional financial services and products. It just makes people want to have some of our solutions. I don't think the solution that we have in the form of RDAP can be replicated in its exact form elsewhere, because it's pretty unique. It took us a long, long time to have all this built into one app and own the ecosystem. So it cannot be replicated, but bits and pieces can be exported. So I think because we also now own the solution providers who have provided us with the technology, we stand ready to offer our solutions to banks in Kazakhstan, in Europe, in Singapore, and Tokyo. And we have talked and showed and pitched American financial institutions, because I think innovation and introduction of technology and the way to replicate it and way to sell your solutions in the most efficient manner will determine the final outcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we are good in what we're doing, but then there are so many other ideas and innovations that are present in different markets that we want to bring them also here. Mm-hmm. So ARD is now at the crossroads when we have to make a decision on how we want to expand and through what which partnerships we want to enter different markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a you know brilliant advice to give to listeners, and I'm very curious because you know since you have so much you know experience building financial markets, what advice would you give to not only to fintech founders but also in generally speaking, what things they should do and what things they shouldn't do in order to achieve massive success in their careers?
Well, I think if you don't feel like you want to be an entrepreneur, please don't do it. You know, I think it's if you're not drawn into it, and if you're not excited with adventures, with risks, with failures, you know, you shouldn't do it because it's a very time-consuming, nerve-wracking type of a job to be an entrepreneur, because you have to be constantly very tense, and you have to have a backbone that can withstand some heavy hits and some big falls, because you're gonna fail. And you have to have the stamina and the backbone to get up again and continue looking for a way out of the situation. Because you will get into situations where you probably think that you are done. You face a wall and you don't see any way out. And this is a daily life of an entrepreneur. And I have to deal with dozens of startups which we own, which I made a decision to invest in, to build. Mm-hmm. And then there is technological issues, financial issues, leadership issues, human resource issues, tenant issues, rising cost issues, weather issues, tragedies happen, etc. You have to somehow not lose the sight and keep going no matter what. And this is my advice. If you're not doing it yet, please think hard. If you're doing it, not too late to turn back and get a 9-to-6 job, you know. Then your wife will be happier and you will be happier. Your kids will see more of you and you will be, probably you'll live longer. Because there is going to be a lot of stress. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And, but I've lived all my life like this. I sleep well. I try to exercise. I try to eat and drink healthy. Of course, you have to sustain unlimited amount of alcohol. You need to have that stamina to, because alcohol, I think, in the end, also helps me get the toxins out of the system. No, one shot per day. So yeah. You need to have some remedies, you know, to keep going for many years, because you need to have a staying power. And sometimes I just wonder why I do this, you know, why can't I just relax, enjoy, chill, you know, and not come to work for a week or something.
Yeah,
No, I
that's
get up
something.
at 5. Today, I was the first guy at work. Now I'm 52. And it's minus 20 outside. I want to be in plus 30 somewhere.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Because a lot of the founders and entrepreneurs before starting their journeys, they always think that, okay, I'm gonna start a business, I'm gonna, in a year I'm gonna build a $1 million empire, I'm gonna just enjoy my life. But a lot of the times, including yourself and all the other guests that we host on Ivy Podcast are, saying for a fact that's one of the toughest jobs that you can have ever. Not the toughest one, obviously, but one of the toughest for sure. So
It's
I
mentally
also
very draining, especially if you're a serial entrepreneur. It's mentally unhealthy, and I, yeah, I keep telling my wife, okay, next year, we're gonna go do certain something. And keeps going, for many years.
Yeah, exactly.
Next year never finishes.
Yes, absolutely. That's very true. In terms of your leadership principles, so what leadership principles helped you scale our group from a small idea into a group with national reach?
Well, lots of love and support from my team and people who have faith in me, and I think my family, my kids always give me inspiration. My wife is always happy. You saw her. She's like, hey, what are you doing? Do you want to eat something, etc. And so you need to have very effective teams, talented people around you to succeed, and you need to keep them, you need to inspire them, and in order to inspire them, you need to. I had, during 2012 elections where I lost, I had this motto: be brave, be have a goal, and never stop. And so these three, have a goal, be brave, and never stop, will. My is my credo. I try to stick to this principle. I have to be able to communicate my ideas and persuade people so that they develop belief and faith, and then you have to have the credibility so that people follow you. Your credibility comes with you from your past achievements, and your past achievement sometimes means that you have failed, but then how you come out of the failures is what people look for. And so you have to have dignity, and you have to not bend and show it to your people. Now I'm probably one of the oldest guys in the company. It's easier for me because it is, young people usually have respect for the older, wounded, scarred wolves. Yeah. So I'm the wolf, the Akela of the wolf pack for now, for now.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Everything you're saying is very, very, coming from life, coming from real experience, not from just from books, because a lot of the people are just reading a couple of books, listening to a couple of podcasts and just seeing inspirational things. But everything you're saying is coming from the heart, is coming from real experience, and I really appreciate it. So if you were to build an art group from the very scratch, from the very beginning, what would you do differently then that would make you even more successful, not only financially, but also in generally speaking? Or what mistakes would you have avoided?
Well, definitely I would have avoided making quick decisions in investing in certain initiatives. I would have avoided. I would have saved lots of resources, money, and time, and actually also people if I said no to certain very sexy and appealing projects. And so you have to have this very well-balanced view on risk and say no to some new initiatives and calculate your resources. Calculate it not just for today, but for next 3 years. Build reserves, cash reserves, human resource reserves, credit reserves, so that you can go through rainy season, rainy times, because there will be bad weather ahead. You have to have the reserves of courage also.
Yeah, that really makes sense, because a lot of the times, and sometimes, like including myself a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, unfortunately didn't know all the things that I wish I knew. But you know, I always ask this question is because I love, you know, I'm a person who loves talking to much more experienced people and things that they committed as a mistake, and of course try to implement that experience and leverage it to get my career, you know, going, you know, accelerating faster. And I also ask this question not only for myself but also for all the people who might be interested in this question. And everything you're saying is absolutely makes sense. In terms of,
you might have a great idea, a great project, and you don't want to fail because you didn't have enough cash in your bank account to cover 3 month dry season, yeah. And so, so you need to be prudent. You need to be able to see risks and manage the cash flow, so that you don't stop. In order, because if you stop, you're not gonna reach the objective. Of the original idea.
100%, 100%. One of the last questions I wanted to ask you. So as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, you of course handle a lot of stress. And what personal habits or philosophies help you handle uncertainty and stress as a CEO and as a leader?
Well, I think there's the absorption capacity of all the bad news, because no matter how you warn your executives that you don't want surprises, whether they're positive or negative, there will be surprises. And most of the time, the surprises will be negative, whether in the form of a phone call, or an email, or you know, somebody walks in with a resignation letter. No, okay, I resign. You know, and you're managing boards and you're managing CEOs. You have to make sure that you stay composed, facing difficult. There will be fraud. You'll lose money in the financial industry. People will steal money because you have overlooked certain internal controls, because you are an entrepreneur. You're building stuff. And during the building process, there will be cracks through which some asshole will try to go out and take money. Not some, a whole team. You have to have that, the guts, the stamina to swallow it and go on and find solutions, because there will be solutions and you have to communicate it, and you cannot panic because you're leading people and they're looking up to you for a solution, and they are looking at your facial expression, how he will take this bad news. Does he start panicking? I run a crypto exchange. I run a DeFi project, a stable coin project. I run, meaning me and my team, yeah? There are different companies. A DeFi project called Art Money. We have a stable coin Mongolian Tugrik Tatar. We have utility, we have security tokens, and we have real world assets. We tokenize one of the prime buildings here in Ulaanbaatar.
Mm-hmm.
To provide access, democratize access to capital. The mission is, remember, invest the nation. We want people to learn how to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are mistakes. The prices go up and down. People commit fraud. They lose money. Just today, one woman walked in and she said, you know, I just wired my hard-earned art coins to somebody and that guy disappeared, you know, with her. And she said, what do I do? You know, so just take it as part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
Have the stomach to handle all the stress during the day. Go home, spend time with your kids, and sleep well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the ability that you need to develop. If you want to be successful, live beyond 50, and still have a dream to live, to see your country become one of the richest countries on the planet. Yeah, you have to have the stamina.
That's an amazing advice. Amazing advice. Yeah, again, thank you so much. One of the last questions I wanted to ask you, like the last question, is one of the learning materials that you implement on in your daily life, whether it be a book, a podcast, a magazine. Could you please recommend us something that you consume on a daily basis?
Can you repeat that again? Sorry.
Yeah, so we always ask this question our guests in terms of the learning materials. So could you please share of the learning materials that you implement on a daily basis?
Well, I have you can Google me, Kang Hoyak, and I do lots of interviews and podcasts. There is a book, if you're interested, written by a girl. It's 100 Days with Mr. Gan. I think it's being translated now into English. There will be another book published now and put on Amazon by a Western publisher. I think they're launching it in January in Davos.
Mm-hmm.
And you said learnings from me or from anybody?
Yes, exactly. What you usually read, what you listen to.
Oh, well, what I usually read. Well, yes. I read a lot. I read, now I turn into biographies. So Steve Jobs was very inspiring. Elon Musk, the most recent one was, I learned a lot, you know, from his way of thinking about and doing work. I read Warren Buffett,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'm also an investor, and so I like reading about these heroes. I like reading Chinggis Khan,
mm-hmm.
His story, Secret History of Mongols, and all the books about Chinggis Khan and the conquest. Because, and I say many times that my business plan is actually the secret history of Mongols, because Chinggis Khan, the way he managed people, the way he confronted difficult situations coming from the most difficult circumstances, yeah, and managing to build an empire, the largest empire in the world, you know, is very inspiring. And I learn a lot from these guys, you know, who are maximalists, who are probably not the best people. And I don't pretend to be a good person, but, you know, I have a mission. I have a goal, and I go towards it. And I sometimes have to, if I have to fire people, say, it's nothing between me and you. It's not gone. It's my position speaking. So would you please just submit your resignation? And that's nothing personal, you know. And this is comes with a job, you know, because if you want to be a manager, a CEO, a leader, you have to make personal sacrifices, and you have to sacrifice your people
mm-hmm.
For the mission. And you have to be ruthless. And that's why you're called an asshole. That's mm-hmm. why you don't have too many friends. And that's why you sit in your office and nobody wants to call you sometimes. You know? So you're lonely. And that's the corner office.
Yes. Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much again. We really, really appreciate your participation. Everything you said, it's absolutely makes sense. A lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom behind your words. And definitely, I personally took a lot of notes. I'm definitely going to rewatch this podcast a couple of times at least. Yeah, thank you so much for joining.
It is really good to talk to you, and I enjoyed it. And I hope to see you in person. Welcome to Mongolia Economic Forum next June.